Chapter 29. Padres. Cadean cracked the door.
"Jen requests to see you, Your Grace."
"By all means, let him in," Merrell replied happily. Cadean swung the door open wide and Jen strode in and bowed.
"Your Grace," Jen said, genuflecting, "I am sorry to bother you so early this morning."
Merrell sat in front of the fire to dry her hair as her maid brushed through it.
"Quit troubling yourself with all that bowing and scraping, Jen," Merrell said as he finished his bowing and scraping. "You may go, Cora."
"Yes, Your Grace," she said, handing Merrell the brush and leaving quickly.
Merrell stood. Her breakfast, sweetbread, jam and cider, waited for her on a nearby table.
"Now, good morning, Jen," Merrell smiled, crossing to him and embracing him. "I am delighted that you came to see me."
Jen received the embrace awkwardly, not quite sure why the First Mother showed him this tenderness so often. She held his gaze with her bright blue eyes.
"I can only hope you are here for the pleasure of my company, and not because of some pressing matter."
"Your company is as pleasurable as it is difficult to find oneself in, but I do have something I wish to talk over with you, if you'll permit."
The First Mother frowned teasingly at him.
"Well, that was certainly an unfortunate and diplomatic answer. Come eat with me and let me know what is troubling you. And shut the door the rest of the way, Cadean."
"But Your Highness,"
Cadean protested.
"Do it, Cadean,"
Merrell commanded as kindly as her exasperation would permit, and Cadean reluctantly complied.
"I'm not sure what further stunt you'll have to pull to earn that man's trust."
"I think he fears I'll behave dishonourably toward you, Highness," Jen speculated.
"Dishonourably?" Merrell grinned, sitting. "Do tell me more. And quit using honorifics when we are alone or in informal situations. I can tolerate such behaviour from other people, but when you do it, it just annoys me. Now what dishonourable things is he afraid that you will do to me?"
"I hadn't anything specific in mind," Jen answered lamely.
Merrell chuckled.
"You are certainly Tolnorian. Please sit. There is enough for two here," she said, breaking off a piece of sweetbread and pressing it to his lips. "Tell me if this isn't the finest sweetbread you have ever tasted."
Jen chewed the bread and raised his eyebrows, Merrell watching his reaction with pleasure.
"Mana has some secret that elevates it above ordinary sweetbread to something more sublime."
"That is very good," Jen concurred. "I wonder that she doesn't serve it in the commons. She would earn everyone's undying good opinion."
"If you ask her, I'm sure she'll bake a loaf just for you. Any time I see her, you are half of what she talks about. Now, what did you want to tell me?"
Jen leaned back in his chair and recounted her daughter's outburst of the night before. The First Mother's levity disappeared instantly, and she stopped eating as he talked, her face paling and turning grave.
"I don't know if she would object to me telling you this," Jen finished, "and you may know some of her concerns already. I don't think I have the influence and ability that you do to aid her in these struggles. I can help her with enemies of flesh and blood, but I think she needs you to see her through the rest."
"Do not doubt your own wisdom. You have done the right thing in telling me," she said. "I have not spent the time I should have with her. So much to do. You would think that preparing to relinquish one's reign would be easier. I have to see her, but the Council of Padres arrives today, and I'm sure I'll be forced to meet with them until well after dark. Churchmen like to hear themselves talk."
"They are here to see to the Shalane's protection, aren't they?"
"Yes."
"Then wouldn't they need an extensive overview of the grounds, and every building on it?" Jen asked.
Merrell's face brightened.
"You are absolutely right, and I'll be damned if I'm going to lead a bunch of churchmen around in the cold. But on whom do I lay this task? Since the lake was frozen over, they were forced to ride for over a week in the cold. They will be irritable and, I suspect, more than a little annoyed about being out in the freezing weather even more."
"Aethrys is the obvious choice," Jen suggested. "He can rattle on for hours about anything, which will give you more time, and the Padres will be too intimidated by him to offer him much complaint."
The First Mother thought for a moment.
"It's perfect," she said. "I may get the whole afternoon with her if Aethrys can hold out that long."
Cadean cracked the door.
"A message, Holiness," he said. "The Padres have arrived and await your attention in the Great Hall."
"Thank you, Cadean," she acknowledged. "Shut the door." curse it all, they're early. Can't I get just one meal with you where we talk about the weather or music or books? I'm in your debt as usual.
She stood and brushed through her hair quickly. Jen retrieved her cloak for her and helped her into it.
I fret over my daughter excessively, and I do not want to leave her unsupported and motherless during this difficult time. And the next time she tries to go out during the night, you grab her and hold her there, scandal notwithstanding. I'll defend you in the matter. Your arm, sir?
Jen extended it, and she took it, kissing him on the cheek and thanking him again. Cadean fell in behind them as Jen escorted her over the bridge and into the tunnels underneath the great hall. Her scribe, Maffeus, met her there and started to outline her schedule for the day.
"Forget all that," she interrupted. "Cadean, I want you to find Aethrys for me and bring him to me immediately."
"I am your protector, Highness," Cadean protested. "Send Jen. He is off duty."
"Cadean," she remonstrated, "do as I say. The Padres specifically requested to meet Jen, and I will help get him through it quickly so he can get some rest. I will see you shortly."
Cadean bowed stiffly and left.
"Maffeus, I will be with my daughter from lunch through dinner. Please have her informed."
"Yes, Highness,"
Maffeus said, following as the First Mother started forward.
"But I received a request from the Blessed One. He wishes to dine with you this evening."
Mirel stopped dead in her tracks.
"What? Has Caimus arrived then?"
"He should still be 2 days out, as I reckon it,"
Maffeus explained.
"Go check with the house guard and see if he arrived during the night and bring me word. Go! Yet another unwanted distraction."
"What does Caimus have to do with Shaitan's request to take dinner with you?" Jen inquired. Jen knew Caimus served as court magician for Shaitan Cairn, though he knew little besides. Caimus, due to his nationality, was not as well known as Aethrys.
"Caimus," Mirel explained, "is Shaitan's handler, for lack of a better term. He is also Aethrys's brother. When we were in Ogmir last spring, Shaitan's manners improved considerably whenever Caimus watched over him. He is a frightening man, but if he has arrived, we will likely see Shaitan behave much more nobly, if the term can be applied comfortably in his case. It isn't anything to worry about. Let me introduce you to the Padres and see if we can't spare you as much boredom as possible."
Padres formed the governing council of the Church of the One. The council currently consisted of 17 members, and together they held as much authority as the pontiff himself. That the pontiff would summon them all to the aid of the Shalane evidenced his concern for her safety and his resolution to protect her at all costs. To gain a seat on the council, a man had to be adept in at least one of the magical arts, possess an unwavering loyalty to the church, and have lived an exemplary life. Padres were elevated from prelates, chosen by the council itself when a vacancy came free. Jen felt a little trepidation about meeting all of them at once. The Council of Padres wielded a great deal of power, and had historically not brooked any opposition to their mandates. Only Ogmerians flouted the church leadership on a regular basis, and there was no love lost between Shaitan Cairn and any church leader in lands under his control. Chamberlain Herney straightened at the First Mother's approach to the doors, bowing deeply. Mirel smiled affectionately at him.
"Are they here?"
"They await you within, Your Grace. Let me announce you."
The guards pushed open the doors, and the Chamberlain planted his feet, striking the tiles of the floor 3 times with his staff.
"The First Mother of Rugoth, the Lady Mirel, comes to her hall. May I present with her Lord Jen Blackshire, Protector of the Holy Daughter."
Arm in arm, Jen and the First Mother strode into the hall. Mirel slowed their pace to a casual walk, and she whispered to him,
"Forgive a little posturing. It is good to let such as these know who is in power here."
The Padres stood as she entered. 2 long tables with padded chairs were set before the dais, and at each of the 17 places steamed a goblet of mulled wine. Jen noticed several eyebrows raise at their approach, and he couldn't tell if it were due to the First Mother's leisurely pace or her company. Rather than let them sit immediately, she waited until she sat on the throne, Jen standing at attention behind before she signalled for them to sit. All appeared travel-worn and a little cold. The Padres wore deep crimson robes with voluminous sleeves cinched at the waist with a golden rope. A purple stole, embroidered with complex designs, hung over each shoulder. On the left side of the stole, the three moons, Triss eclipsed, were represented. One Padre's stole was different. On his, Triss was uneclipsed, like the other moons. He approached the dais, but did not kneel. His face was long and thin, with a hooked nose separating two closely set grey eyes. Black hair ringed his head in a perfect circle, and Jen judged that he wasn't an inch over 5'6". Despite his diminutive stature and thin frame, his eyes carried a self-confidence and intensity that more than compensated for any lack of size. He appeared to be at least 10 years younger than any other member of the council, though his stole marked him as their head.
"First, Mother," he began gravely, "it is unfortunate that inclement weather delayed our arrival. After we received the pontiff's impassioned missive to arrive as quickly as possible, we had hoped the weather would warm and we could join you more quickly. When news of the disastrous events of the betrothal reached us, we were deeply angered. Clearly the Shalane has not been cared for and protected properly. That a burqa pattern was inscribed inside your chapel, within the inner walls of your castle, is inexcusable. That those who perpetrated the act are uncaught and unpunished bespeaks a bungling incompetence. Things will change, starting now."
His voice, high-pitched and nasal, rang through the hall, his loud accusations echoing throughout the chamber. Jen watched the First Mother stiffen during this diatribe and feared she would say something rash.
"It is good to see you again as well, Padre Ethan," Mirelle said pleasantly. "Was your journey tolerable, even if long?" "Forget the journey," he replied dismissively. "We have business to attend to, and we cannot delay. This must be Jen behind you." "Lord Blackshire, yes," the First Mother answered dully.
Padre Ethan ascended the dais to stand directly in front of Jen. Jen returned his gaze unblinkingly and assumed his now famous dead face.
"I understood that you were young, but I didn't realize you were this young. I wonder why you are the Shalane's knight protector, when a more experienced soldier would certainly be advantageous and desirable, as evil is more active in the dark than the day."
His eyes bored into Jen's.
"Well, young man?"
"I am sorry, Padre," Jen said tonelessly. "Did you ask me a question?"
"Ah," he said, turning away, "you are arrogant and evasive, as I've heard. Just remember that what we won't say often says more about us than what we will."
"Ask anyone you trust," Mirelle suggested, as Ethan returned to the table and sat. "Jen is the best fighter on our soil, and quite possibly all of Kihol, except Shadan Cairn himself."
"I doubt that. He is too young," Ethan disagreed. "The pontiff has vouched for his bravery and moral character, but I can hardly believe he is the best sword fighter, even in this building."
Mirelle smiled.
"He killed Cormeth. What further proof do you need?" "From what I heard of the event, Cormeth lost because he was arrogant and stupid, not because Jen overwhelmed him with skill or experience. I think I would much rather have Cadean or Tolbrook protect the Shalane and have Jen assigned to some other post in the Dark Guard, protecting you in Cadean's stead, perhaps. While I should certainly like nothing better than to have the pleasure of Jen at my side day and night, I will leave him where he is."
Ethan opened his mouth to object, but Mirelle ploughed on before he could start.
"I really do not think you should tender any recommendations to me about anything concerning the Shalane's safety until you have been properly briefed by those entrusted with her care. Ethris will be joining us shortly and will thoroughly inform you about all you wish to know in this regard. While I had planned for you to meet Regent Ogbith tomorrow, I will have him brought this evening in company with Jaren, Captain Tolbrook, and Cadean, so they can vouch for Jen's skill at arms. If they cannot convince you, then I suggest you gather 5 of the best soldiers from the Elderfear and let Jen beat on them until you are satisfied. Or they are dead. And," the First Mother's tone grew serious and sharp, "I love my daughter. I never want to see her come to the least harm, so do not come into my hall and imply that I am not doing everything possible to see to her well-being, and do not, within my hearing,
ever insult, dishonour, or demean Lord Blackshire. He has done more than any man living for the Shillane's life and honour, and you had best show him the respect he is due."
Jen was impressed, and wondered if there was anyone in Key Hall that could intimidate the woman. Unlike the majority of the other padres at the table, Aethon did not appear ruffled in the least.
"And so you know, First Mother, the pontiff has afforded us some liberty in assessing the situation and implementing what changes we see fit to ensure that the Shillane and the Ha'ulric are fully protected and prepared for their important work. I will personally oversee the protection of the Shillane and will require unfettered access to her chambers, her protectors, and the leadership of the Dark Guard. Padra Nolan will do the same for the Ha'ulric. I will speak with all those you have indicated, though it will be difficult for them to satisfy me concerning Jen. I will, of course, want to interview him sometime today."
"By all means, assess and interview to your heart's content," Morell returned heatedly. "Lord Blackshire is my daughter's protector, and that will not change, even if you recommend or even command otherwise. If I find you are hindering him or Jaren in their duties in the least degree, I will pack the lot of you up, put you on the slowest carriage back to Muir Eldaloth that I can find, and pray for snow. I rule in Rugoth, not the church. The next time we talk, I suggest you address me with a great deal more respect than you have done this morning." They were shocked. Aethon's pale face bloomed red.
"Now," Morell said as she stood, voice calm, even flippant, "enjoy your wine. Ethrys will be with you shortly."
Jen escorted her out, the padres already chattering frantically to each other. Morell leaned in close.
"And they were so pleasant and accommodating in the letter announcing their imminent arrival," she whispered. "Aethon obviously has an agenda. I am going to write the pontiff immediately. I wish he had never left. Let's go find Ethrys. I'm afraid his job just became more difficult."